Today is March 13th, 2006. It's a beautiful day. This is the Weekly Roundup, a Mac Observer podcast. I'm Ricky Spiro. To get the full story on anything we cover in the show, you can visit macobserver.com/roundup. This week had legal news the way I like it. No protracted struggle, a sensible decision, and the defendant still had to pay its own legal fees. This is the sort of thing they should have worked out outside of a courtroom. They couldn't. They went to court. Everyone said their piece. Apple got to keep using their logo. Everyone pays for their own stubbornness. My kind of court case. What am I talking about? A ruling in favor of Apple Computer has been handed down from a London court over the use of the Apple logo on Monday. Apple Corp., the company that manages the Beatles' music and marketing, had filed a suit alleging that the Mac and iPod maker was violating an agreement that prohibited the computer maker from using the Apple logo in association with music. At the center of the legal battle was a 1991 agreement between the two companies where Apple Computer paid Apple Corp. $26.5 million in exchange for the expanded use of the Apple-shaped logo. Judge Edward Mann ruled that the logo was being used appropriately as a moniker to identify the iTunes music store and not in association with the music that the store sells. The judge agreed with Apple Computer's argument that the logo was used on the iTunes Music Store as part of a data transmission service, which is allowed by the earlier agreement. In a brief statement, Apple CEO Steve Jobs said, "We have always loved the Beatles, and hopefully we can now work together to get them on the iTunes Music Store." Neil Aspinall, the manager of Apple Corp., plans to appeal the ruling. Apple Computer also filed an application for an interim payment of $2.8 million from Apple Corp. for its legal expenses. That application, like I said before, was refused. My kind of court case. Now, we've known for some time that Apple Corp. is digitally remastering the entire Beatles music library, and Apple Computer wants it for the iTunes Music Store, naturally. Eddie Q, Apple's vice president of iTunes, commented, We'll do everything we can to get them on iTunes, them being the Beatles. The Beatles aren't available in any digital format today, but they're going to be one day. We certainly hope that happens on iTunes. Despite the potential animosity between the two Apples over fair use of their logos, analysts agree that it makes good business sense for the Beatles' music to be distributed through iTunes. iTunes is the dominant legal music download service with somewhere around 70 to 80% of the worldwide market and can offer a distribution channel unrivaled, naturally, by other internet-based music services. At the end of the day, analysts expect that business rather than emotional considerations will prevail. Take as a bellwether Phil Lay, an analyst with the market research firm Inside Digital Media. They're not going to refuse to market through iTunes since it's the most popular site and it's linked to the iPod. No surprises here. On to a different subject, Sony announced on Tuesday that it's planning to add support for the AAC music compression format to some of their Walkman digital audio players. Sony is making the move to bolster its music player popularity among iPod and iTunes users. Sony will not be using FairPlay, Apple's proprietary digital rights management technology that protects media purchased from the iTunes Music Store, but the move to support AAC allows Sony's Sonic Stage music management application to import songs that are not copy-protected directly from iTunes. The announcement marks another nail in the coffin for Sony's unsuccessful A-Track format, which has been criticized for poor audio quality. The added support over time of MP3, WMA, and now AAC have been moves meant to improve the company's distant second-place standing to the iPod. Sony's updated Sonic Stage software will be available as a free download starting on May 25th. The controversial copyright bill that would force companies like Apple, Sony, and Microsoft to open their proprietary DRM, or digital rights management technologies, to competitors has been approved by the French Senate with an amendment that offers an avenue to keep the copy protection schemes private. The bill has maintained the concept of interoperability, but added a new regulatory agency to mediate requests for details of the various DRM schemes. The intent of the original bill was to create an open system where portable music players and internet-based music services all offered compatible products, that is, compatible media. A Sony Walkman, for example, could play Fairplay protected music downloaded from the iTunes Music Store, and an iPod could play songs downloaded from, say, Napster. The new regulatory agency will have the authority to order companies to share the technological details of their DRM schemes with competitors, unless the digital music and movie download services can show that they are protecting the content in agreement with the copyright holder. Since the copy protection terms are typically part of a distribution contract, that shouldn't be difficult for Apple or any other online media distributor to show. The amendment also prohibits open source software developers from publishing source code for applications that contain any DRM technology obtained through the law if the original technology developer can show that it would adversely impact the copy protection's effectiveness. So what's next for the French bill? Well, it can become law, before it can become law, this version out of the upper house has to be reconciled with the more radical bill that passed by the lower house earlier this year, kind of like the conference committee process in the United States. And moving on to another iPod-related subject, Apple Computer has changed the fee structure of its Made for iPod licensing program. The program charges iPod accessories vendors who wish to advertise that their products are compliant with the iPod's 17-pin dock connector. The fee for the program used to be 10% of the product's wholesale price. Going forward, it will be a flat $4 US fee. The move certainly makes the program simpler for Apple to manage, but it also heavily favors manufacturers of higher-priced products like speakers, and it squeezes makers of less expensive items such as FM transmitters and the like. As an example, a $30 FM transmitter might have a wholesale price of $20, but Apple would then collect a staggering 20% of the wholesale price. Apparently, most such licensing fees are set up to be in the 1% to 2% range. By the way, in addition to the Made for iPod licensing fee, manufacturers also have to buy the actual dock connector from Apple, which is a separate charge. The dock connector is controlled by Apple patents. All right, so we got all this news going on. Once again, as always, always glad to have Jeff here on the show. Jeff, welcome back.
Thank you, and it's always a blast to be here.
And I'm not sure that the last sentence I said made any sense, but let's get underway. Let's start with this Apple versus Apple ruling. First of all, did you have a prediction before this thing happened? Were you expecting it to fall out the way it did? Does this surprise anyone that this happened?
My prediction is that it would go the way it did, meaning Apple Computer prevailed and Apple Core did not. So, yeah, but then I also think that there's a lot of people that were expecting Apple Core to come out on top in this little legal battle.
So it wasn't that, you know, everyone, this might have been a surprise to some people, but it is interesting to me. One of the things that catches my eye about this, I've mentioned on the show already, I'm really glad that Apple Core was not forced to pay the legal fees for Apple Computer. I always felt about this thing, you know, they came up with this agreement, which in retrospect probably to Apple looks kind of silly, that they signed off their rights to not get involved in music. They signed this thing in 1991, and the whole situation seems a little bit ridiculous. So much has changed in the last 15 years. But at the same time, this also seems like the sort of thing that they should have worked out on their own time outside of a courtroom. And so instead, they went to court, everyone worked their stuff out, but everyone had to pay for their own stubbornness in the process. Does that seem a little too harsh to anyone involved in this?
You know, it's okay for you to be harsh. I'm fine with that. Actually, I think that what we're dealing with is a situation where no one really anticipated what was going to happen with the technology. And I think Apple Core is a little bitter because they didn't anticipate that someone would come up with an online music download system and that it would be very successful. And of course, it turns out that Apple Computer was the company that did that. So, you know, when you're trying to look into your crystal ball, and I know mine is always in the shop, so I'm always second-guessing. I'm guessing their crystal ball was in the shop, too, and they were hoping that they could apply an agreement that they had already made based on what the technology was at the time to the situation we have now. And the court said, well, nope, didn't work out. And, all right, so these are both big companies to a degree, so let them pay their own legal expenses. I think that's okay, especially since Apple Corp most likely is the company that has less money out of the two. So why throw the extra burden on them? No reason to pour salt in the wound.
Fair enough. And this whole thing does, like you're saying, it does seem kind of difficult to apply an agreement that was made in 1991 where the technology was totally different and where presumably what Apple Corp was originally interested in was just saying, look, we don't want you to be in the music business. We don't want people to confuse Apple Corp that does Beatles marketing and music with Apple Computer that does technology stuff. And it seems like a nice middle line to say, look, these people over here, they do music, and these people over here, they provide a technology. They provide a music store. And Apple obviously wants to be perceived as hip and groovy and sort of in the middle of the music scene. But at the same time, the provider of this service. And so it seems to fit, it seems to be a nice line for the judge to draw. Even if Apple would like to be more associated with music than this agreement would allow, or even if Apple Corp would like to get more money out of Apple Computer than this judge has allowed, it seems like, you know, it just kind of says, all right, everybody, settle down, go back to your little places, and let's move on with life.
I agree. And the judge followed the word of the contract, which I think was the correct thing for him to do. And I think he judged appropriately in this case. And of course, on the other hand, I can't remember the last time I walked into Tower Records expecting to buy an iBook and was so upset when I got home and realized I just bought the White Album.
It's an easy confusion to have, I suppose.
Oh, absolutely.
We, in our business, we like to make everything into a grudge match. And when you read people writing about this sort of situation, people seem to believe that there's really bad blood between Apple Corp and Apple Computer. Is there any reason to believe that exists, or was this whole thing just business?
I think this was primarily just business. And I believe it was actually necessary for Apple Corp to bring this case against Apple Computer because they have a very real interest in protecting their logo and their image. And so they needed to do something, give their little show of force, as it were. And that's what made this lawsuit necessary. Had they not done this, okay, everyone else could start using an Apple logo and say, well, you know, it was okay for Apple Computer to do it with their music, so it must be okay for us to do it too. So they've let everyone know, hey, look, this isn't okay. Great, they've done that. They're talking about appealing. Okay, fine, that's business. They need to do that too. But at the end of the day, it is still just business. And I think eventually we will probably see the Beatles music at the iTunes Music Store, which is what Apple wants. And that will be something totally unrelated to the lawsuit we're dealing with right now. It's just business.
Now, when some people were writing about this lawsuit, they said, yeah, we expect to see a settlement come out of this lawsuit where Apple will settle with Apple Corp, Apple Computer will settle with Apple Corp, and part of that settlement will be, sure, we'll give you a big wad of cash, and you'll agree to put your music on our store. And that looks like it's not going to happen. Apple has, the initial ruling is in their favor, which is a very strong position to be in. And it seems like the Beatles would still want their music to be sold online because that's been a very productive thing for a lot of artists to do.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it will work out that way eventually, as far as music being on the iTunes Music Store. As far as a settlement, I would have been surprised to see that because At that point, we'd have Apple Computer saying, all right, anyone that's using something that relates to an Apple, we'll just pony up some cash to shut you up. And in this case, they're saying, look, we had a totally legitimate right to use this logo in the fashion that we are, and we're going to stand up. So, you know, it's back to the, it's a business thing. And I think it was important for Apple Computer not to settle.
Now let's move on and talk a little bit about Sony and the AAC music codec. For a moment, let's play the following game. Let's imagine that we have the reins, the two of us have the reins at Sony. So the two of us, I think, just got a lot richer.
Hooray.
What do we do? What decisions do we make at Sony to compete with the iPod? What can possibly be done right now if we're running Sony? What can we do to compete with the iPod?
I think in our newfound wealth and power, we're going to need to do a couple things. First is make a product and a music service that outshine the iPod. And then second, make that new music player product work with every single audio format available.
All right. So that's easy, right?
Oh, sure. I'm, with all the money and power we have, it must be simple.
My impression of this has always been that the software side of it is at least as critical and probably far more critical than the hardware side of it. People have always talked about how easy to use the iPod was, and maybe at the very beginning the iPod had a better interface than the other stuff that was out there. But I've gone into stores and I've played with the Creative Zen and some other things, and the interface really isn't all that different. To me, the major difference is that iTunes is such a complete package for managing music, burning CDs, making playlists, streaming music to other computers. To me, the hardest challenge has always seemed like the creation of a true iTunes alternative with good search, way to manage a large amount of music and do all these other things, and easily update whatever the music player is.
Yes, and what you have to do to really compete with Apple in this arena is reinvent Apple. Apple is, from the beginning, had the primo slot when it comes to design, because they do, as they say, the entire widget. So they've got the software, they've got the hardware, and they've got the service all designed to work together. And Apple's really the only company that has that whole package deal. So someone else has to come up with another Apple, in essence, to compete with the iPod effectively.
Now, we've talked about this on this show, and the two of us have talked about this, and Brian has said similar things when he's been on the show. Everyone says, look, in order to compete with the iPod, in order to compete with iTunes, you've got to provide a complete package and do it well. But you know, people have already gotten used to the idea of the iPod and used to the idea of iTunes, and so people don't give that up for something that's just equivalent. They give it up for something that's better, like you were saying. What is there right now that the iPod or that iTunes doesn't do that we at Sony could now fix? If we were going to figure out what the biggest unaddressed part of portable music is right now, what would that be?
Some way to be able to walk down the street with your iPod and say, I want to buy this song now, and hit a little button and do it. And that's what's missing from your iPod right now.
Which sounds a lot like what people talk about when they talk about the cell phone networks and purchasing music.
Exactly.
So we'll see how that works out in the future. Let's switch gears and talk one last time, please let this be the last time, about the French DRM bill.
You know, you can beg all you want. We will talk about this more.
Now, is this amendment the final round for this open DRM provision?
Not even. This is just the next phase in the ongoing battle, the soap opera that this bill has become. So what we have right now is an amendment to the French digital rights copyright bill thing that gives companies like Apple, Sony, Microsoft, Virgin, all these companies that have their own proprietary digital rights management system, they have a way to protect that a little bit more now. And instead of having anyone be able to request the secret sauce inside each company's DRM so that they can make their own player service, device, whatever, now this can only come from other companies, and you can, as Apple, Sony, whoever, you can refuse to provide that information, and then it goes to a new agency in the French government, as if governments don't have enough agencies already, and it will be like an arbitration system. If the company that does not want to divulge their DRM technology can show that they're in total agreement with the copyright holders of the music on how all this has to work, then they can ultimately say, all right, you don't actually have to divulge your DRM technology.
And of course, the copyright holders all specify the terms of the digital rights management that's built into the content when it's sold online, when they write the contracts. So that's really not going to be an issue for anybody.
I don't think it's going to be an issue. I have a feeling that there will probably be certain situations where some of the contracts will have to be slightly renegotiated to make sure that the language is correct for France. But outside of that, I think basically what's happened is France took this bill that they've created, pulled the guts out of it, threw that out on the street and said, look at our new bill that does almost something.
And well, if it does anything, it sounds from what you're describing like it creates a lot of jobs for bureaucrats and lawyers.
Oh, lucky that, at least for those guys.
And for the French taxpayers.
Yeah, and for the French taxpayers.
Let's go one more round with this one other question, which I guess is the only really relevant question at this point for anyone who's watching Apple Computer. And we've addressed this in bits and pieces in the past, but why is it that Apple opposed the original form of this bill where they'd have to go and share all their DRM with their competitors? What is the real reason for their opposition to that legislation?
The reason that they gave was that this would enhance piracy, because there's really essentially no penalty for someone to break copyright protection and distribute music any way they want. So they called this, I believe the words were, state-sanctioned piracy.
Yep.
Now, I'm sure that does play into it some, because if anyone can just go and steal music without recourse, why would you go pay for it? I think even bigger, and the man behind the curtain, is actually the fact that Apple doesn't want to divulge what their DRM technology is. It's part of that whole package that Apple has with iTunes, iPod, and all the music that you buy. So if you take away the exclusivity of FairPlay, the DRM technology that Apple uses, and anyone can now use that, now it's much easier for you to go to other music services, and it dilutes the value of iTunes, and Apple doesn't want that.
And of course, now with all of the millions of songs that I've purchased on iTunes, I can now go and load those in this hypothetical world we're talking about, I can load those onto any music player I want to, so I'm no longer locked into the iPod in the future.
Exactly. And Apple said in the beginning, the purpose of the iTunes Music Store was not to sell music, it was to sell iPods.
So, that's enough of that. Let's take one look quickly at the other story this week. I was really intrigued to see the mention of the change in the pricing structure for the Made for iPod program. What's your reaction to that?
I'm kind of confused by the whole thing, actually. And part of that's because I have heard, although I have not confirmed, that this change took place a while ago, and now we're just suddenly hearing about it today. So if it's as huge and big a thing as people are making out, why didn't we know about it when it actually happened? Now, if I'm wrong and it did just happen, okay, it all makes sense that it's a big deal now. I think this is going to potentially be a big problem for the little guy that's making iPod accessories that use the dock connector, because that's what this really affects. For the guys that are making a $15 or $40 iPod case. It doesn't affect them at all. So I see for the sub $100 dock accessory market, this could potentially be a big problem, because now you can't license the technology from Apple, you can't get the dock connector pieces, and I think it could be a real headache for some of the little guys.
Now, it seems, in many respects, it seems like the most likely thing is that for people that make accessories under $50, anyone that makes accessories under, say, $40, they'd be paying greater than 10% in the wholesale price of their product. It seems like they would just walk away from that deal. They'd say, you know what, this is not worth our money. We'll continue to make the product. We'll continue to sell it as best we can. We're just not going to put that Made for iPod logo on it. We'll pay the money for the dock connector, but this is silly. We can't afford that. Is this going to drive people in that range, say the sub $40, $50 range of accessories, is it just going to drive them away from the Made for iPod program?
Time will tell, but I think that's very possible. And I think for bigger companies where they can subsidize the cost through their higher price products, it'll be okay for them. But it's the small guy that it's going to hurt.
And that'll have to be the last word. Jeff, thanks for coming on the show.
As always, it's a wonderfully fun experience.
Cheers. As always, if you have questions about the news, comments, thoughts, anything at all, let me know what you're thinking about what we're doing. You can send emails to roundup@macobserver.com. And this week I've just got a couple of products for this part of the roundup. Nitro AV has introduced the Expressway FireWire 800 Professional Express Card Interface Adapter, which is a very long name for a product. It's a first-of-its-kind high-speed FireWire adapter for the MacBook Pro, and it costs $90 US. Radtech added three new Bluetooth optical pointing devices, those would be mice, for the uninitiated, to its product lineup on Tuesday. The BT100 and BT300 are three-button mice, including a built-in rechargeable battery and USB charging cable, and a scroll wheel. The BT600 offers the same features in a five-button mouse. The mice are priced between $50 and $60. Also this week, Brad Cook previewed Call of Duty 2 for the Mac. And that's the news. Thanks for listening to the weekly roundup. Our content is written by the terrific people over at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by the terrific people at Cashfly. The bass is by Boom for TMO. Stay subscribed, and until next week, I'll see you online. Any particular thoughts before we get underway?
Would be great if I had an evaporative cooler that worked.
All right. Well, that's going to be our starting thought.